Welcome to episode 6 of WP Dev Table. We're talking about automating your WordPress deployments, and our special guest today is Ben May from Australia. If you haven't seen WP Dev Table before, this show is basically a roundtable discussion between WordPress developers about automating our workflow, tips, best practices, and basically a way to learn from each other and to help everyone get better. If you haven't subscribed to us before, you can do that on YouTube, you can do it on iTunes, you can like us on Facebook, you can subscribe to us via email, whatever you like, so feel free to do whatever suits you. And my co-host, as per usual, is Jason Resnick, and I'll let Jason introduce himself. Over to you, Jason.
Hey, guys. My name is Jason, and I'm an independent WordPress developer and consultant. I basically help designers and agencies with all their projects and achieving success in them by developing their designs into websites. I'm actually excited, though, because I'm about to release my first product here in probably about a week or so now. So it's called WP Field Guides. It's basically an insight into the methodology and processes that are behind WordPress development. It's in the form of downloadable content, videos, webinars, one-on-one sessions. It's basically geared towards those that have ideas and want to make something happen on their site with WordPress, but not sure about, you know, the development side, whether they want to bring a developer on, tackle it themselves. So I'm kind of psyched about it, nervous and psyched at the same time.
Cool. I've even had a sneak peek of it, and I really enjoyed what I read. Jason's written the first chapter really well, really good. It's something that I wish I had when I first started learning. So it's good to learn from someone who knows what they're doing. Yeah, so I'll introduce myself now. So I'm Bronson. I work at I formed a company called Senza. We do custom theme development and plugin development in Australia. We look after mostly corporate clients and, yeah, specialize in that kind of thing. And now I'll throw over to our special guest, Ben May. So, Ben, introduce yourself.
I'm primarily a back-end WordPress developer, come business owner, and we have a small team of developers and bits and pieces doing SMB WordPress development work from scratch, so bespoke design and development. And we also work with a handful of publishers and larger style clients with high traffic and scaling issues and that sort of stuff. So we have a bit of a cross-section of development work throughout Australia, really.
Excellent. Yeah, and Ben, we're lucky to have you on the show because, yeah, those high traffic sites, and you're really specialized in using Amazon Web Services, which is great, and running WordPress on there. So part of that obviously entails automating your workflow and deployments. So thanks for being on the show, and get to grill you a bit about what you do. So our first deployment methodology, I guess, if you can call it one, we might be using it now, is of course SFTP and FTP. So how many of you guys have used that in the past, and who's still using it?
Yeah, well, I'm using it definitely still, unfortunately. Sometimes there's no way around it just because of the client sites, but it sucks. There's no control.
Yeah, I guess that's ultimately still what it comes down to for a lot of us. For some clients, if they're hosting on their own internal infrastructure, this could be the only deployment method that you have. So you're stuck with doing what the client wants, and I'm sure we've all been in that situation from the sound of it. What about you, Ben? Have you been stuck in that situation, / are you in that situation with some clients?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we probably shouldn't even call it a deployment strategy, really. It's not even a deployment method. It's just a file transfer, really, when you expand the abbreviation, and that's all it really is, isn't it? But on small sites, that's still the way to go, SFTP anyway. But we're pretty fortunate that we don't use FTP anymore. We had a scare once on one of our web servers, and not sure what caused it or who, if it was a password that got picked up somewhere along the line, but that it was a very small scare, but that was enough for us to switch it off altogether everywhere on anything that we run anyways, on any of our servers. So FTP's out the door completely, and on the odd client who will pop up and have FTP, and they'll say that they have FTPS or some very lame version of SFTP or some sort of security involved, but... SFTP still has it. I mean, it's still the default for a lot of even managed WordPress hosting platforms, right back to, you know, the cPanels and the Plesks. It has its place, but, you know, it's fraught with danger if you don't realize the risk if it's a busy site or if you realize you're cowboy coding or playing with fire, you're out by yourself.
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that because I know a while back, I won't name the person, but one of my friends had FileZilla to store all his passwords in, and that actually doesn't store encrypted passwords. Someone got a virus on his computer, got all his passwords, and he lost sites pretty quickly. So that made him, A, switch clients to have something that actually has a master password and encrypts his passwords, and... B, made sure that he never used FTP again.
Does FileZilla still not encrypt its password manager?
Correct.
Because I remember it used to have that passwords.xml or whatever it was, and it was literally just an XML feed of usernames and passwords. Still, that's still a thing.
Still got it.
See, I never used FileZilla just because of the name. I didn't like the name. I was like, this is kind of hacky. FileZilla. I'm glad I never used that now.
Cool. All right.
See, Firefox and Chrome, their passwords used to be all unencrypted, but they upped their game a little while ago and became encrypted. But they were exactly the same as that. I remember I could do a Dropbox hack sync and, you know, have your passwords synced across. But, you know, before cloud stuff was a thing, that got fixed pretty quickly. So, good old FileZilla.
Yep. They'll get there one day, hopefully. So, next one we've got on the list is rsync. So, I've used rsync. I've been working around with a plugin for Chassis, which is a system that Ryan McHugh and I have been working on, which is like a lean version of VVV. It's like VVV on a diet, so it's just all you need. But part of that, I've got a Ruby gem that pushes stuff to DigitalOcean, and their deployment method during that is rsync. So I've used that for that before. And with that, I had to set a lot of different flags for certain things. Mostly, the main thing was excludes, because I have a lot of scripts that are like grunt scripts and tasks, and I'll have sash that'll create sash cache and just crap files that you don't want on your host. So I've got a big exclusion pattern there for that. That's the main thing I've used rsync for. What are your boys' experiences with rsync? Have you used that for deployments in the past? And what do you think of it?
I haven't, but I know, when I've looked into when you have multiple web nodes across the board and stuff, that, you know, like managing the uploads directory and things like that, like, you gotta either, if you're not on a CDN or something like that, then somehow you have to sync those files across, and rsync is usually one of those options that.
Yeah, right. What about you, Ben? Have you used rsync for any of that kind of stuff?
Rsync, I've played around. I mean, it's funny. It's like one of the oldest part. Like, it's an incredibly old and simplistic part to a Linux operating system, and it's still, you know, pretty powerful if you know what you're doing. It's a bit like using Vi as a text editor. But I really use rsync when it comes to, say, if we're working on a site that has a current production server and we're building up a new site on a new production server and basically building a migration script that will log in, do a database dump, rsync some stuff over, delete stuff, so we can do it once and automate that process so we can constantly be refreshing production data down to staging until we're ready to flick the switch rather than trying to remember the 12 different commands all over the shop. So I play with rsync in that context quite a bit. Like Jason was saying about multiple web heads and keeping the uploads directory in sync because everything else should come through the version control. There's another system, another tool that's a little. I think it's the newer invention of rsync, and it's called lsync, which is basically runs as a daemon rather than rsync, which runs as a process that you constantly call. So lsync is a live daemon that watches directories and will do that exact thing. And we've played with that, but my experience with playing with synchronizing multiple webheads is that it needs constant integrity checks because things can fail silently and can cause a lot of pain. So when you have editors in a website and images randomly loading and refreshing because the sync goes crazy, that's a lot of fun. The Amazon people we work with, Bulletproof, they've been playing a lot with Glust. It's a virtual file system for doing distributed file synchronizing like that, and it appears to be a lot nicer way of doing it rather than lsync or rsync, purely just because of the nature of syncing stuff forever.
Does it do like an MD5 checksum or something so the file integrity, like it actually has the kind of truthy way of checking?
But even what we've had in the past is lsync just quietly stops running for whatever reason and all of a sudden, and then you invoke it again and it will just have this big spike, it'll go figure it all out. But if you have, 500,000 uploads, because, you don't have to have many files. If you have 10 versions of every image, you could have millions of files. It's a big array of files to synchronize and figure out what it needs to do. So we have one solution that uses that, which is not a long-term one. It worked and it still works, touch wood.
Yep.
But longer term, there's better ways of doing it, and that's the thing that you can deploy have a deployment strategy this week, and next week someone will even create some wonderful Linux little tool that just makes it 10 times easier and more efficient. So you're forever chasing your tail, but that's the name of the game.
Exactly.
So you're using is the virtual file system off of S3 or how is
that? That's still using EC2's S3. I've looked into and done a bit of due diligence on, and a lot of reports are that it's a bit too slow and not consistent. It's not really the best performance for that respect. Like, you can mount S3 drives, but it's not technically designed for that. It's sort of a nice way of getting around it and getting, a file system access to an S3 bucket, but it's not really designed for that. So that tool is designed basically to run your, it's Gluster FS, which I can give a link to, so we've got it there later. But that's more of a distributed file system for projects like this, which is really gaining traction. Apparently it's quite popular, so that's our next deployment, is to have a play with Gluster and see how that works nicely.
Awesome. It'll be good to see how you go and learn about that. Next one we've got on our list is Ansible, which Ben and I both don't have an experience with, but Jason's had a bit of a play with, so I'll get you to talk about that one, Jason, and what you thought of it.
Yeah, I looked into Ansible because my business partner, he's a systems engineer, and he's he's used Ansible pretty successfully in a number of different server configurations and that kind of thing. And basically, I saw the power of it, and I was like, oh, you know what, maybe I can do some automated deployments with this. Maybe this is better than, let's say, Capistrano, which we'll talk about in a second. But it's just, I don't know, I guess as a developer, not a systems engineer, like, it seems to me that it has its part, I can see, especially in, like, multi-web nodes and, even like database, maybe like, multiple databases and things like that for some of the, like, you can take snapshots of things and deploy a brand new server, like just all the automated scaling type stuff, and Ansible might work there. But as far as, maybe deployment of code and database and stuff, I don't know. It almost seems that it might be a little overkill, but it's also, I don't know. I find that like things that I can do with Capistrano, because Ruby is the you know, the language behind it. I can program, I can literally program with the Ruby. So I don't know. I'm still kind of messing around with it because I almost want it to work. So it's kind of like a pet project. Like I want to see it successful. So we'll see what happens. You know, stay tuned.
So it almost looks a bit like a commercialized version of Puppet or something along those lines. Except it has a really nice looking UI and being able to trigger a lot of that stuff from the UI, so you can run everything from a, you know, which everyone loves UIs. We can't have enough, you know, user panels to do things.
Yeah, I mean, Ansible, I've always used just command line, you know, and it's just, it's nice how you can, like, break everything up into playbooks and roles and things like that. It's just, it makes a lot of sense. It's just, you know, I don't know where it fits just yet.
So it looks sounds like from what we... Oh, I think we both talked over each other and then Google Hangouts cut out on this band. Yeah, from what you were saying, Jason, it sounds like it's like a full stack development and SysOps kind of deployment system. So
yeah, it's a it's a configuration management tool. So it's you know, it's like, so if I have a whole environment and, you know, I can, you know, make checks and balances using Ansible, I can also deploy new servers and you know, it, you know, set up a brand new system using playbooks and things like that. So it's really neat tool, you know, like you said, kind of like Puppet or Chef or one of those types of deals. The thing is that it's agentless, so it goes over SSH and stuff, so, you know, you don't need anything on the other servers other than Python, but, you know, most you know, Unix-based systems already have Python installed, so.
Interesting. Cool. All right, so our next one on our list is Capistrano, and I think we've all had a bit of a play around here, so maybe Ben, you can kick this one off, and then Jason, and then I'll throw in tidbits here and there.
Sure. So Capistrano, I think we have running only have in one environment, and there's a couple more coming, one at least is coming up that we'll be playing with, and it's a nice, it is a nice best of both worlds for deploying stuff. Especially if you've ever done the easier way, which is essentially have a remote server, just do a git pull by when it needs to deploy stuff. And when I experimented around with it and the one system we have using, there's a few different ways to approach how you can sort of configure Capistrano, whether you include your local machine as sort of the device that can do the deploys, or whether you use one of the web servers or a Linux machine of some sort that's out in the cloud, so to speak, that can initialize and do the deploy, I guess, the cap deploy functions, but where you can quickly access that file to then do the rollback or to do that sort of stuff. So I've liked Capistrano, and when we got it working, it really has it makes sense, especially on much faster production systems. I mean, the reason you would use it over a Git based just doing a Git pull on production is that you don't have the risk of Git merge issues and things like that. And over SFTP, it basically pulls the files down beside the other directory and then switches the symlink, the directory, in real time, like instantly, so you don't have issues of partial deployed files bringing down a site. So Capistrano is something we've figured out and made work, and I enjoyed playing around with it, but not using it enough yet as I would like to be. I think it's definitely got a power.
Yeah, the thing that really appeals to me and why I'm shifting towards Capistrano at the moment is, yeah, basically, like you said, it uses symlink, so you can say, all right, I want to keep 5 releases on the server, so it'll timestamp those in the different folders. This is more for people who haven't used it. I know we all have, but yeah, you're like 5 releases in different folders, all timestamped, and then it symlinks those depending on your deployment, and you can also just do a rollback quickly, like rather than going, oh shit, I've got to revert a git because you've done git pull on the server, like revert that, which is just terrible. Like you got to wait for that to happen. You just like roll back, bam. It's so like nothing happened. You can just say, a client might ring up, hey, something just, no, no, it's fine, like, refresh it now, like, it's all cool.
Yeah, momentarily the problem has resolved itself, yeah.
Yeah, which is good to,
but
good
it
to
does,
know.
Like, it does have a lot higher, it does have a lot higher system requirements, so that's the one caveat with Capistrano. I mean, unless you're running your own dedicated infrastructure, I mean, I don't think you'd even be able to run it on something like WP Engine or Pagely or one of those sort of managed hosts.
That's what I was going to actually mention that.
Yeah,
because WP Engine, they just basically, you can do Git deployments on there, but yeah, sure, that can kind of work, but you can't do anything else because it's so locked down. What I'm actually doing, because I'm shooting over to WordCamp Europe to talk with some people next week, I'm having dinner with the SiteGround guys, and one of the guys there, Chris, he's actually talking at WordCamp Europe, but we're actually going to talk about Capistrano deployments on SiteGround's plans, because he said like playing around with it, and we're going to actually work on that, and to me that's an appealing enough for me to shift our clients over there. Like, I've used SiteGround for quite a lot of stuff, and I'm actually really impressed with their systems. They give you a lot more control. You can get WP CLI, like the tools that we're all used to using every day, where most other hosts don't really let you use. They're starting to roll it out, so I'm excited to learn a bit more about using Capistrano on there, the higher end
because
plan.
Capistrano, essentially, it's just the connection between a server file system and a Git repository anyway. Like, it really just, all it's doing is just a bunch of, like, it does a Git pull into a new directory, and it timestamps it, and it does it really efficiently, and a few bits of nice stuff, and switches some directories around. Like, it's not anything that's awfully complicated, so you configure it up, and it goes off, pulls down the branch that it should pull down, sets the files up. Once it's happy the files are there, then it switches it, rather than you just automating a Git pull or manually doing a Git pull, and potentially having something break and you having to go into merge conflict resolution mode and Git quickly on a production server and whatnot. So, yeah, that's been my experience. And yeah, something like SiteGround, if they were able to bake that in a very efficient and easy-to-use way, it would be the no-brainer, really, wouldn't it?
The cool thing is...
Go ahead.
Sorry. I was going to say, the cool thing is here, like Jason, with your background, you've got the Ruby background as well as WordPress, so you've used Capistrano for a lot longer than both of us, so you can talk about how it's used in Ruby, and because I think it does database syncing there in Ruby, which I don't know whether you've got that working in WordPress yet or not, but yeah, I'll let you have a chat about the differences there and what you'd like to achieve and all that kind of stuff.
That's what I was going to ask is how you guys, use Capistrano and how do you handle the database, because that's always seems to be the pink elephant in the room, on the nice part about Capistrano is that releases directory where you can just, with a single command rollback change, and all it does is really change the symlink. The database really, like, to kind of bring up if you have to upgrade plugins on your deployment or things like that, that'll get to change it, and then what? Now there's a problem. How do you roll everything back neatly, let's say, without having to, jump through hoops before you actually even deploy your code? That's the only thing that I've really had a problem with since I've really been starting, since I've focused on WordPress development. That's kind of where I found WP CLI from. Just a way to script the database to have, full-fledged rollbacks. Because, I've had, I have a client that we're on Rackspace now, starting to move over to AWS, but it's just... we've had a problem where we've done everything works fine in staging, and then when we deploy to production, then it's, something happens, we have to roll back plugins, we have to roll back, the code. The code is not a no-brainer, but it, it's just with the database itself is, always seems to be a problem. And the thing that I like about Capistrano the best is the way that you can write custom code to it. Like you were saying, it's all Ruby. It's a Ruby gem, so it's just I have a task library, let's say, of various different tasks that I have to do, because the platform has multiple plugins or something like that, where, you know, goes out and pulls these plugins and activates them or whatever it needs to do. And, you know, just by using, you know, simple Ruby commands, it's pretty powerful that way. And that's kind of why I'm still on it, because you can do a lot of that stuff. But like I said before, I see a place for Ansible, and if you can homogenize everything, the systems and the code, you know, that's kind of where I want to be. But again, the database is always a beast. I don't know the answer to it. It doesn't seem like there is an answer to it out there.
What about you, Ben? How do you deal with database syncing?
Yeah, data. I think that was my most recent blog post I did. I posted a few things about databases. Like, it's we had someone working for us for, I think, about 9 months in the end. It was only meant to be a short term thing, but we kept having things pop up. And Jeff was a Laravel coding writer developer first, and we brought him in, and he did some WordPress backend stuff as well. And one of the things playing with Laravel that I was pleased by was that it has a very nice thing. Well, there's a lot of nice things, but one thing it does very well, especially because you're writing your own code and your own database logic and whatnot, is you basically have you have migrations. So every time you release something as a feature or whatnot, you write out the database change. So when I would say pull down a feature that he's done, I would do a git pull, and then I would do a PHP Artesian migrate, and then that would run any migrations that I haven't had, create columns, create tables. And then I could run a seed function, which would populate some seed data in there. So this is cool. And then using Jeff as an example of a non-WordPress developer and someone who doesn't have any brotherly kindred love for WordPress whatsoever, I can understand why developers like that don't get into WordPress, because WordPress is incredibly sort of all over the place approach to database and the amount of configuration that is in the database. And then you have the discrepancies between plugin developers, how they do it. So I looked at a few of the different tools we've played with for database migrations, one of them being the WP Migrate Pro, which has definitely got some advantages. A new one that I saw pop up a few months ago, which was called WPCFM, which that was, I think, based off a Drupal idea, but it was similar how Laravel did its seeds. You basically would bundle up a change and deploy the change and execute the change, but you're operating on the assumption that everything stores in a key value system in the options table, which doesn't happen very often. Because you'd have something like gravity fields or ACF, and they just store things in serialized arrays and custom post types, and everything's linked up in their own way. So you really have to have your A game about, like, oh well, if I'm gonna migrate a gravity form, I'm gonna do it this way. If I'm gonna deploy some ACF changes, I need to do it this way, or I'm going to write it to a file and then deploy the file, but then I have to keep the XML in sync, so if anyone else wants to ever work on it, or I want to use human-made custom meta boxes, that fixes those sort of problems. So, you know, it's trying to make sure you use a tool that's going to, like, using a tool that is compatible, or a plugin that's going to be compatible with a deployment strategy is one thing, and then ensuring you've got the process every time. Because ACF, I would argue, isn't very good for a deployment strategy unless it's a very linear one developer, one production, one stage. Like, if you have multiple people working on it, you're constantly pushing and pulling the master version of the ACF configuration or the master, you know, gravity form or whatnot. So, the database stuff is definitely hard. You also have things like RAMP, which I think does very well from what I've read, but it's only for a very subset
posts and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So and again, you don't have that rollback. So I don't even know how you would fix that problem. If I had nothing to do tomorrow and just wanted to sit down and, you know, attempt to fix that problem, it's a really hard problem to figure out. Because it's a combination of using plugins that are sort of built with the purpose of, you know, of a deployment multi-server, multi-developer strategy. And then how do you pass that stuff along? Like, in Laravel, again, you would do your feature change, and then you would commit in one of those things would be your migration PHP file, and then it would just get run on deploy, and everything is up and running then. How you do that with WordPress when you're using third-party stuff is very hard to do.
Yeah, that Laravel sound, I haven't done any Laravel before, but that's exactly how Rails is. It has the migrations, and you basically define your database as you develop, and you just execute that as a part of the deployment, and it works nicely. And that when I shifted my focus to WordPress, that was like day two. I went to. I was like, how do I get migrations inside WordPress? And there was nothing out there for that. I've come across a pretty cool thing, Dictator, which Daniel
Bakuba.
That took over WPCLI is doing that as well. But there's it's just for core objects. It's posts and pages and stuff like that. So it doesn't include any of the third, it doesn't include any plugins. He's basically looking for people to write their plugins to do that as well, I guess.
I've played around with that too, Dictator, and I think it's really amazing. It's cool. So you, rather than it's very, very simple to set up. You just store all your WordPress options that need to be set in a YAML file, and when you deploy, Dictator goes and grabs that and will set those options for you. So that's kind of cool for setting your options. If all the plugins could do it as well, like you were saying, if people could write it for plugins, it'd be fantastic. But I guess this comes back to the problem, as Ben mentioned, it's such a hard problem to solve, because you can solve it, but by solving it, you've got to then kind of re-educate so many people and plugin authors, theme people, how to use whatever solution you've come up with to solve that problem. So you kind of essentially haven't solved the problem, but you kind of have.
Yeah, and I don't know what the answer is there.
Yeah.
The automation come up with something better, that'd be great. maybe they could put migrations. We got to get Nason on the line. Maybe he could put migrations in WordPress.
Got to get an API in there first, WordPress API, the core first, I think. You mentioned WP Migrate DB Pro in there, and I think we've all had experience using that. I've used that a few times, and it's really good, but with our current setup, because we use Chassis, and anyone who uses, say, something like WordPress Skeleton by Mark Jaquith that stores the content directory outside of where it normally sits, WP Migrate DB Pro isn't made to use custom content directories, which is... They have fixed it, have they?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sweet. When did they fix that?
I don't know. A number of months back.
Wow, I missed it. Okay, I take it back.
Because I used, not WP Skeleton, but it's derived off of that, and it works fine. I mean, as long as you're on the latest versions and things like that, as long as you're not running like WordPress 3.1 or something like that, it handles it fine.
Cool. Oh, wow. Yeah,
was it pulling down the uploads? Was that the problem for you?
Migrate DB Pro has a media files add-on, so it'll actually allow you to pull down, and actually it does like a diff on the upload, so if you're going one way or the other, you can say, reconcile the differences. If these files exist, then just skip them or bring the other ones over.
I've never really used it too much, because a lot of the sites we would use Migrate Pro on, I would be sitting there pulling down 10 gigs of images, and it doesn't affect the development process. So, I mean, the way I've got around that on projects like that is essentially having an htaccess or a nginx rule on my local machine. If the file doesn't exist, try it off the origin server, and that works. I mean, you then have issues of resizing images and whatnot, but you can just create a test post or create test data to do that sort of stuff. But it prevents seeing a whole screen full of 404s or broken images, which is a handy little sort of workaround, rather than filling up an SSD MacBook of uploads that are totally irrelevant to my work.
Well, the news that it actually does custom contact directories, and I missed that. That's like made my day. I don't know what I'm going to be playing with tomorrow.
Awesome. I actually saw they released, I don't know if they released it yet, they announced they were going to be doing command line, you were going to be able to run it through the command line. Has that actually...
And there's a CLI add-on mentioned on the homepage, so it looks like they've done quite a lot of work in the last couple of months.
There was, There was an actual, somebody had written a WP CLI plugin that also leveraged Migrate Pro to kind of communicate, but I guess Brad and the boys kind of came up with their own add-on, so I'm pretty sure that that's a little bit more smooth, but...
Cool.
Yeah, Migrate Pro is nice, but it's nice on sites to a certain size, from what I found. Mm. Again, like if you're trying to pull down a 4 gigabyte database or something like that, especially doing it in 1 megabyte pieces or whatever it breaks it down to, and to be doing it all through the browser, the poor old Chrome is, you know, using terabyte of RAM at that point by its, if it hasn't crashed. I'd be interested in seeing the command line interface, but again, if it's running it through PHP, it's sort of running it through the web stack, which is not really as optimized as running a Ruby gem or something like that, which can connect straight in the root level, do what it needs to do and get out of there, like a MySQL dump, boom, rsync it down, MySQL import, it's all over, rather than we have to break it down into a million pieces and run it through PHP, which then takes up our worker threads and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, exactly. So, on sites of a certain size, it's brilliant, and it is really nice to be able to be pushing and pulling, you know, off a staging site to be able to do the changes and all that sort of stuff. And it saves us, like, we've got a developer license. I think I just bought it straight away without even testing it, because for the sites that you do use it on, it just saves so much time. Like, it's not worth even discussing it, really. It's definitely has its place in the tool belt.
Cool. Yeah, so the next one we've got is deploy.io without the E in deploy, because that's cool in web 2.0, right? So I've used that before, and it's basically a stripped-down version of Beanstalk, which we're going to get to pretty soon, which is Ben's main one.
Okay.
It's just basically a Git kind of side of things, and you can look after Git and use SFTP, FTP, you use it, or SSH. It's like kind of... uses one kind of part of Beanstalk just for kind of really
simple deployments. That's like the complete UI of Beanstalk. I haven't seen that before. So they've like just extracted their hosted Git part and just rolled out the rest of it. Okay, wow.
Yeah, which is cool. Yeah, so you use that with GitHub and Bitbucket rather than everything on Beanstalk, which we'll get to probably soon.
Mm.
Have you used that before, Jason?
I haven't used deploy.io, but I've used deploy.hq.
Cool. Well, I'll let you talk about that because that's next on our list. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. You know, to me, it's just like adding another layer on top of, like we were talking about, like FileZilla or something like that. Like, to me, I mean, it allows you for rollbacks and things like that, but, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's okay. I guess if you want to take it the next level up, you know, from FTP or SFTP, at least tools like that allow you for rollbacks and things like that if a disaster happens during your deployment. But again, it's not the full game. So
how fast are the rollbacks with DeployHQ?
It's okay if you don't have, hundreds of files, because everything is being, transferred over FTP or anything like that. So it's through the browser. So you click the button and you're just waiting, you're just waiting.
Yeah, right. It is just a baby step above SFTP.
But I guess deploy HQ, and I think there's like deploy button, and there's a few things like that that are very similar. I think what they did was basically build the bridge from, if you used GitHub or Bitbucket, which was just a repository, they did that link between getting it from GitHub or Bitbucket from just a version control over to the server, and going server to server rather than you having to push files up from your own computer. So if you're, on a hotspot, you just deploy commit the files, and if you leave a certain message or tell it to go, it will deploy the files across server to server, so it may be a bit more reliable and, better than your own Wi-Fi dropping out halfway through a transmission or something like that, and everything goes down. So I guess that's what they did. I don't know how incredibly useful or how many people still use it now with a lot of other services out there that do it all in one, or And I'm surprised GitHub hasn't added that sort of feature, if maybe they have.
Me too.
To just GitHub, take care of that little thing.
Yeah, I think GitHub would rather just, you know, make the webhooks available and then somebody else go solve that.
Leave it up to you.
Yeah. And GitHub's a lot bigger than just web codes, you know, projects. Mm. It would be it'd be a niche segment for them.
Yeah, that's true. So I guess that leaves us with the next one, which is your expertise, Ben, which is Beanstalk. So tell us about how you use that, why you use that, and what it's.
So I got started with Beanstalk right back in the day when I guess my first version, when I finally decided we needed to use version control. So we were working on a big publishing site and I was doing some stuff with them, and they had another developer who I never spoke with that they just randomly gave each of us jobs to do. And, you know, it would be one of those cases where you'd see things like, you know, footer underscore yesterday's date, footer underscore yesterday's date v2, and all this kind of rubbish. And we slowly got into, like, oh, can I do some work on the site? Is so-and-so working on it now, or am I right, or, you know, that sort of stuff. And this is back in, you know, back when I never had any version control experience. So my first thought was to use SVN after I tried to make, you know, do my own things and whatnot. And I basically wanted something that I could use to SVN the file. Like, I had no conceptually how it sort of worked or whatnot. But I just wanted to basically have a tracked SFTP account. So I would just commit the file to it, and it would FTP the file to the server. But anyone else could do it. Like, all the client, me and the other developer could all do it as well. So if there was five or six users, we wouldn't be overdoing each other's work. And that's how I started with Beanstalk, because they were hosted SVN, because I ran SVN on my local server in the office. And I'm like, oh, that's handy, but now how do I get the files across? And I, for whatever reason, I found Beanstalk. And then after constant peer pressure from Bronson and from a few other people I know, I finally, you know, sat down one weekend and learned Git, and, you know, resent that one SVN repository that still exists every day. I just would rather not do anything on that project because I know it's SVN, and I just feel like I should be charging more for the psychological damage of it. It's just so unpleasant to use that damn SVN versions client that I have set up, and it's just not worth changing. But it'll move one day. But so Beanstalk then, I don't know if they even did Git back then, but they rolled out Git, and I, you know, needed to learn how to do it. So as nothing else, as a hosted version control, that was the first thing. So I used that instead of, say, GitHub, or I don't even know who would do hosted SVN back. Like, I don't even know if that's really anyone would give a rats about that these days. So maybe that was how I found them originally. So and then the natural extension of that is once you have the code up on the repository, getting it across to the site. And, you know, on probably half of our sites, we still have SFTP, but they're low traffic sites. They're not really that big a deal. You know, we're not constantly rolling out files and whatnot. I mean, we have some sites, one even that's still moderately, actually, that's pretty big traffic still. It's still over 3 million page views a month. And they use Pagely, but they're on a non-VPS Pagely account. So you have no version control or anything with that. So we basically just connect. We turned off their media temple server and switched over to Rackspace, to Pagely, and just redirected the SFTP endpoint where it deploys files to. And, you know, that solved the problem because Pagely don't give you anything, like no Git or deploy or staging or whatnot, until you get to like their VPS,
really,
which is. Which is pretty much adding a zero to the first package, so it's a big jump for anyone. So SFTP still has its place, but apart from that, we also then use SSH to log in and run commands. So, you know, on very primitive deployments where we used to use Git, you would log in, change directory, Git pull, Git submodule init, Git submodule update, Git whatever, and it would do its thing and check out. And similarly, it would be able to do a Capistrano deploy. But the SFTP one was a really nice one for more primitive sites and where clients wanted more control, because SFTP actually gives a really nice rollback facility built into Beanstalk. So if a client wanted to be able to do it, they could just go and deploy and, you know, pick a revision and a comment from a drop-down and just go, oh, send it back to that revision. And, you know, if a footer went up with the wrong logos in the bottom or whatnot, and they felt they needed that backup option of them having to roll it back in case, you know, I don't know, we committed some code and then disappeared that second. So it had that very simple level. It still did, and it does parallel SFTP, so it's slightly faster than than standard SFTP, but it's, you know, it's not the best by any means, but it's, you know, it's a much better way of doing it than doing it by hand or, you know, any manual process. But it's just a bit slower, and you obviously have the risk of partially broken files while things are getting rolled over. But being able to run your own deploy scripts is a really nice, you know, functionality. We also use it for multi-servers, so it will deploy, it'll execute the command in real time across however many servers we need to run it on. So if we have three web servers and we hit deploy, or, you know, when we commit to a branch, it will log into all three servers and tell all three servers to do its thing at the same time. And, you know, it spits back log messages, so if something does go wrong, you've got it emails you, or it notifies you pretty quickly, and you can debug what's going on and all that sort of stuff. So we've been pretty happy with Beanstalk. I think we're up to whatever it is, however many repositories. It's worked quite nicely, and it was nice, sort of a sandbox when I was, you know, first getting my feet wet with version control, and just never left since then, really. But it's just one of those things. It's also done very nicely in terms of, I guess, it's a bit more graphically UI friendly than, say, GitHub, because I think just in the emails they send out, like the diffs and the merge, the changes over the last 24 hours and all that sort of stuff, it's quite nice. And the last thing that I would like, that I really do like about it, is the integrations they've done with, you know, and again, it's probably much of a muchness these days, but, you know, the whole HipChat, or connecting it with issue trackers and connecting it with other deployment things and Basecamp and all that sort of stuff. I know that's pretty common in most nowadays, but right from the beginning, they had a lot of those really nice little bits and pieces, which was, you know, all those bells and whistles that we all love to play with, so... That was pretty cool.
What's their Amazon support? Like, I know that's one of the things, like, they pitch Amazon Rackspace and Heroku. They've got good tight integration there. Like, what benefits, because you use Amazon for things, what are the extra kind of features you get through Beanstalk for Amazon deployments?
So, to tell you the truth, I've actually never used those styles of deployments, because they would be more for, if you want it. So what you could do, and you can be quite clever about it, is you can say, you could set up multiple deployment profiles, and if you were building a site where you wanted to throw all your theme assets onto an S3 bucket, you could create a deployment profile that would only deploy the contents of a certain directory within a repository, and then deploy them to CloudFront or to S3 or to whatever else, while the code went somewhere else. So if you had a certain way of doing it, that sort of feels like a bit of a back to front process, but there's definitely people who would use that. I remember when Chris Coyo started using Beanstalk, he did a few tutorials and used things like that for moving, you know, static assets off to S3 and whatnot. Rather than I would do it in the back, I would do it from the server end and whatnot. But if you wanted to use it in that way, it would be very handy.
You were saying before that you use your own deployment scripts. So do you use Capistrano on Beanstalk? Because I know they have that. But do you?
Correct.
I guess if you do use that, can you write your own custom?
So you basically would set up a So you set up your own recipe if you want to do that. But you can also run stuff before and after the Capistrano run. So if you wanted to say, look for a message, or if you're pushing from a certain branch, you may want to restart Memcache to flush all the objects out of the Memcache. When you do a Word, like, so that's something that we do when we upgrade a core version of WordPress, is we just restart Memcache because it just saves anything mucking up or the client seeing something or whatnot. So you're able to basically write anything that can be executed from the deploy user. And it does nice things in terms of they've taken security pretty well, like two-factor authentication. They allow us to connect to servers using SSH keys rather than passwords. So Beanstalk will give us an SSH key, and we just install that on the server, and it's all good to go. So it's quite nice. It feels like it's a moderately secure and acceptable grade. It's not just to enter your plain text FTP passwords and we'll just store them in plain text and connect when we need to, sort of thing. Like it feels pretty safe. I feel pretty trusted with the platform, and the fact that it just has everything there in one spot. That's been my rampage for the last 3 months, is consolidating so many damn services that we have. So the fact that Beanstalk's always been, done about 3 different things for us has always been great. So it means we don't have to leave anytime soon.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It sounds like they give you the right amount of control and options for what we kind of need on a day-to-day basis rather than just locking things down too much, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, you can sort of dig into it a bit, and that's the nice thing about it. It does give you a lot of different settings, and you can sort of tweak and adjust. And the thing is, as you would appreciate in client services, unlike product businesses, every client is different. Everyone's got their own hosting setup. Everyone wants files deployed a different way, a different time, a different style, So we're able to sort of set up, adjust things as we need to. We're not sort of stuck to, well, this is the only way that Beanstalk does it. We can sort of say, oh, well, if we do push to a certain branch, this goes here straight away, or other people want it to go when they're ready and things like that. So it does give us a little bit of flexibility, and, it is quite powerful like that. So
It sounds really good, really cool.
And they actually, I think the most recent feature they did, they actually built a Git proxy type system. So basically, for say us in the past in Australia would have been pushing and pulling to repos in the US. They actually built this. It's quite an interesting video. They built this proxy like a CDN almost, a Git CDN basically. So I would push and pull from an Australian repository, which would then sync back to the main infrastructure and all this sort of stuff. So the speed of pushing and pulling stuff in the last 6 months has dropped dramatically. It's a lot faster than it used to be.
Yeah, right. Is that on their blog or somewhere, that video that you talked about?
Yeah, I'll dig it up and we'll add that in there.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, it works really well.
That sounds awesome. Cool.
Beanstalk's Git CDN, aka World Domination. There it is. We'll drop that in the show notes.
Yep. Champion. Cool. Sweet. Well, I think that's come to the end of our list, I believe. Are there any other things you want to talk about, gents, that you can think of? Have we covered most of it?
I think we got most of it.
Yeah.
You guys do any continuous integration at all? Just like a yes or no?
No. Too risky in my books.
Yeah? Why is it risky?
Well, it just depends. I don't know. It depends on the types of features you're making, I guess, whether they're minor feature changes or big ones. I don't know. I just prefer, I don't know, in client-wise, rather than just going, hey, we're continually fixing your stuff, I can only imagine them going, what have you fixed now? 10 minutes later, what have you fixed now? Whereas I prefer to go, hey, we are going to roll out these things at 5 p.m. That's just personal preference, and that's working with clients. If I was doing product stuff, I would. I know the guys at Happy Tables, they do continuous deployments, which is fine for them. But, yeah, I guess client service-based, that's why I guess I don't do it. I don't know about you, Ben.
Yeah, it comes back to, again, it comes back to clients' preferences and budgets. I mean, we do have a few that basically we push to master and it goes straight to production. And they're usually things like add a label around this or add a new button here or things like that. So stuff like that, it's not worth staging it and doing a sync. It's a pretty simple UI, or it's a very simple functionality thing. Or if we build some functionality in a plugin, we can push it up. It's not actually running yet. They can switch it on. Bigger projects we'll package it up. Other clients who like to be very, particular about 1 pixel padding alignment on a social media button, we'll bundle all of those little changes up from a Trello board and push them all to staging, check them all off, then deploy them, then merge that into master and then deploy them all together. So most of the time it's probably like that, bundling things up, because otherwise it's not efficient. But if you have a to-do list of stupid little things, you can just keep, just knock them off, push them up, and everyone's happy. But it comes back to the project, the client, the budget. What if they even understand that? Like, do you have to check with if the client's going to be around or not before you just push up stuff on their site? If it's their if it's their business, are they just going to go off their nut because you've just pushed all these changes up that they hadn't proofed, or that new Twitter button is going to cost them $1 million in lost revenue now, and whatever. So you've got to play it safe unless you have a really, really good relationship and you know the parameters of what you're allowed to operate in. So.
Yeah, true. What about you, Jason? Are you doing any continuous deployments?
Not yet. Actually, starting to look into it for some things. But it's like, in just doing my research, it's like baby steps first, though. You kind of like, okay, we'll do the continuous integration for, just the staging environment. And then, because you got to kind of, like, if you're not doing unit testing or you're not doing integration testing or anything like that, there's no fail-safes. Like, you check in and then, okay, well, it's got to go deploy and, that kind of stuff. So, just looking in that, it seems like it's, like, from transitioning from not to full continuous integration is, like, months, and making sure that you're comfortable with your tests and making sure that you're not going to deploy something that's going to break. And then, the whole world... your client's like, well, what the heck is on our site now? What is this? Why does this look like this?
It probably works in the right businesses because you would have a CI team sitting around as stuff was getting, as the log was getting pushed out, all the stuff's happening, you've got people constantly testing and all that sort of stuff. If you don't have that right framework around you, all of a sudden you could find yourself in a lot of hot water very quickly. With a lot of features that are now live, because you're like, well, ticket close, deploy. Yeah.
Now we're in version 17, and they're like, well, we were on version 14 yesterday. What happened?
Yeah, exactly. Very dangerous.
Cool. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up the show. So thanks very much, Ben, for joining in. Lots of things off you, and I'm sure everyone else will too. And I'll leave it to you, Jason, to wrap up and do the outro.
So, Ben, where can people find you, reach out to you and say thanks?
I'm a Twitter occasionally at BenJMay and a blog at, even less frequently, at BenMay.org. And I'll be, where are we? I'll be at WordCamp Sydney this coming weekend, and then WordCamp Tampa, whenever that is, a few weekends after. And then Digital Project Management Summit, and then WordCamp San Francisco, and then hiding for a long time. There'll be enough social outings for me.
It's like the Ben May World Tour.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, exactly. I'll be working.
Got to get T-shirts made up for that.
Exactly. Autographs available on request.
It's awesome. Great. And Bronson, where can people reach out to you?
Cool, you can find my company's account on Twitter at Senza, or you can, if you want to follow me, I'm at Bronson Quick, but I tweet random things. It's up to you if you want to follow me. And what about yourself, Jason? Where can we find you?
Twitter is probably the easiest, at Rez. For the show itself, if you want to know when our next show is or get tips and tricks, just go to wpdevtable.com/subscribe. And that'll put you right on the newsletter, and you can learn when the next show is. Also, if you like the program, please remember to like, share, subscribe via iTunes or RSS, or even on YouTube, too. The site will have the show notes shortly after this. So if you're a first-time viewer, please feel free to catch up with all the other past shows on the website at wpdevtable.com. That's about it.
Awesome. Cool.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.